Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with artistic director Ariel Kraft and playwright Oren Stevens about the world premiere of MacBitch, presented by The Bread Box. It features an all-female cast of 10 at the Exit Theater here in San Francisco. On the operatic front, a couple of things from West Edge Opera, director Aria Umezawa, who makes her West Edge debut directing Hamlet by Ambroise Thomas as part of the 2017 festival, which also includes Libby Larson's Frankenstein and The Chastity Tree, also through August 20th. Comedian Samson Kolhatkar, the co-producer of the Daisy Comedy Fest in its fourth year, now in its triumphal fourth year, with audiences growing year after year. It's an 11-day South Asian stand-up comedy extravaganza in comedy clubs and theaters in 9 cities throughout Northern California. He'll tell us about the lineup for this year's festival. Plus, on the opera front, Marilla artists David Weigel, bass baritone, and Ashley Dixon, mezzo-soprano, will be talking about their roles in this year's Marilla program and their participation in the Grand Marilla Finale on August 19th. Stay with us. Well, fluff up your shoulder pads and unsheath your daggers. MacBitch doth come. From the creative team behind last year's critically acclaimed award-winning hit production, The Awakening, comes a brand new Frankenplay of sorts, sprung forth from Shakespeare's Macbeth. And using Macbeth as an entry point, MacBitch collages source material from the Scottish play and other pieces of Shakespeareana, classical and canonical verse texts alongside original contemporary dialogue, drawing upon cult classics for aesthetic inspirations and sporting hints of everything from The Lord of the Flies and pillaged cult films like Heathers. MacBitch examines the formation of female identity around ambition and is the prevailing culture of woman-on-woman violence. The playwright and director join me in studio. Ariel Kraft is a Bay Area director and the founding artistic director of The Bread Box. Recent Bread Box directing credits include The Awakening, named one of San Francisco Chronicle's top 10 of 2016. The company's award-winning production of Martin Madonna's The Pillow Man, a radical staging of Lorca's Blood Winning, and a world premiere adaptation of John Ford's Tis Pity She's a Whore. Ariel serves as Associate Artistic Director at the Cutting Ball Theater as well, where she recently directed a world premiere translation of Racine's Phèdre. Additional directing credits include productions with Impact Theater, Custom Made Theater Company, Wiley West Productions, the San Francisco Olympians Festival, and the San Francisco Girls Chorus. Ariel, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you here. Well, Bay Area-based playwright Oren Stevens focuses on adaptations of material that is part of our academic or cultural canon, so to speak. He's worked with materials as varied as Alice in Wonderland for his play Phantom Wise and The Book of Job for The Assessment. In addition to The Bread Box, which produced his adaptations of The Awakening and Tis Pity She's a Whore, Oren's work has been produced and developed at Lincoln Center Theater, the New York International Fringe Festival, the Yale Dramatic Association, Artists Rep SF, and the Augmented Seventh Theater Program, among others. Oren, welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Indeed. Well, this a provocative adaptation, shall we say. Oren, in addition to the cultural references, what made you decide to put all of this together and using Macbeth as a starting point?
Actually, the original idea was Ariel's. We were sitting together after, I think, a performance of The Awakening, starting to talk about what we would be interested in doing next year. And I think you sort of stopped the conversation and said, guys, I have this terrible idea. And it turned out to actually be, as we talked about it more, we enjoyed sort of the things that made it seem like a terrible idea on the surface. Shakespeare in high school is something we see repeatedly. but there was so much to mine under it. You may want to talk more about that.
No, I just think that the important nugget is that it's a terrible idea, and that's something that I find really exciting, because I don't know that we should be doing anything that we know will go well. And I think there is something in taking ideas that are so played out, like as Oren says, putting Shakespeare in high school is about the most go-to thing that everyone does. So we're trying to take something that is just too tropey, like the tropiest of tropes, and then start a new conversation with them and hopefully crack them open into something more meaningful.
and I think that's part of what we've done, as Ariel talked more about the about how women relate to ambition and especially how that forms. We started to find that there was something really valuable and intricate to mine in taking this very male-dominated play and sort of that very much deals with how people generate ambition in themselves and then transposing it to this totally new context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not necessarily Macbeth with an all-woman cast. It's you're definitely using that just as the starting point.
Absolutely. We've made some very like specific pointed changes from the original. We've kept the original when it was useful, but mostly we've used it as a jumping off point to explore a theme that's central to the original work and something that we see gets played out that is very present in modern mm-hmm. society.
Yeah, it's really ambition is the word that we all associate with Macbeth as a source text, but we're really trying to look at it in a different context and specifically what it means for young women and what are the sort of under-examined aspects of modern feminism and how we speak a lot about the experience of dynamics between women and men, and we speak less about the dynamics between women and women and how that can reinforce really horrendous, oppressive patriarchal norms.
Wow. Okay.
Welcome to Macbeth.
Okay. Ariel, can you give us some examples as a woman of things that you've encountered that as your own work as a director, say you've encountered with other directors? Has it been
sure.
a certain subtleness that has been like, oh, what are you doing? I could probably do that better. Is that that kind of thing we're talking about here? Is it undercutting or is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the process of making Macbeth, which has been a collaborative process with many of us, has been for me a journey of publicly saying what a terrible person I am in a room full of people I respect. So the thing I often say is that I have a fear that everyone's going to all about Eve me. In that someone who is younger and better and in any way superior to me is coming for what I have. And we did a series of workshops last year where we were looking at these plays not for this reason. And a thing we kept seeing in them is that there is this habit to pit women in media and then extrapolating out into life against each other, creating competition where competition need not be. So we essentially work from this idea that in an environment of scarcity for women, where opportunities are few and far between for women, competition will reign and we will become poisonous to each other.
And more than that, there's this idea that in any environment, they're taught and conditioned to perceive scarcity, even if it mm-hmm. doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. And that there is a habit among men to reach down and help each other, and that there is, for many women, the experience of shoving other women away and shooing other women away because there's only room for one of us.
Hmm. You suppose that's because of pop culture primarily and image? Body image as well as ambition?
You know, I think it, I'm sure that that plays into it. I think that there are endless ways that society tells us that we have to look at each other as enemies instead of as friends.
Hmm.
And I think that it comes from our historical sort of patriarchal structures. And it's a shame. And it's a thing that can't get better until we choose to make it better. And so that's kind of what our show is about. But, I mean, absolutely, I watch Macbeth and in our show, there's quite a bit of externalized violence of what would be internalized violence in a real-world scenario. And I perpetually hit Oren on the arm and go, "Desmi, That's me again. Like, it's always when someone is strangling someone else, it's like, oh, that's me. I'm doing that.
So I guess you're kind of tossing on its head the idea that, oh, if women ruled the world, it would have, like, a peaceful, wonderful society. Maybe not so much.
I don't think we are, because I think we're saying that in a world where there isn't enough space for women, this happens.
Yeah, I think the idea in a world where women rule the world, I think that scarcity that is so central to creating this toxic environment would go away.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in a world where women were the rulers and men were the oppressed, I think men would have this experience. I don't think there's anything in this experience that is central to being anatomically female. I think it's the way that society conditions us.
Well, tell us a little bit about the casting process. As an actor myself, I've been in a cattle call situation and hoping for the role and seeing people in the same room that look exactly like me or my type. Did you encounter that in any of your casting, in the casting process for this show, or even in the rehearsal process once people were cast?
Well, it's really interesting to have a group of 10 women. It's something we almost never see, just to sheerly have that many women in the room together. And so my experience is that in process as well as in product, this show is an exploration of how we can work together. And hopefully we're trying to break down those competition barriers, and we're trying to break down the experience of these women looking at each other and saying, oh no, there's only room for one of us, because in most shows there would only be room for one of them. But we have 10. Warren, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think because there were so many opportunities, it made it more like we were searching for a team and less like we had to fill this one or two specific slots. And I think you could feel that a little bit in the audition process, that it did feel like we were more bringing people together into a collaborative environment. Mm-hmm. And also, I think there's something advantageous there about the fact that this was something new, where we could kind of tailor it a little bit to the people that we have.
Yeah, and it was... we've had some people who are in the show who've been with it from the beginning. And we have one of our co-creators is also an actor in the show who's been there since the start of the rehearsal process. That's Maria Lee. But we've also had some actors. The actor who plays Maxine, who is our Macbeth corollary, has been there since day one in the development process, as is Nady, who is our Banquo corollary. So, yeah, people have been very involved and have been through the workshop process with us and have seen it evolve.
So any bitchy scenes as part of the rehearsal process? Any discoveries amongst the cast?
Do you mean off stage or on stage?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot on stage. But what about the All About Eve backstage situation?
That's just me. I just try to be as big a bitch as possible at all times so that everyone else gets it out of the way. No one else has to. I just take it all up.
But actually, the whole rehearsal room has been very... There has been none of that offstage, I think, because we're unpacking these issues in the text, in the work. It makes it very easy to, like, see it in ourselves. Ariel talked about how she sees herself up there. I see myself up there sometimes, too, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to go there. And I think you can... Because we're seeing it, it actually helps us see it in ourselves.
Yeah, and in all seriousness, it's the nicest group of people you could ever hope for, and they take amazing care of each other and of the work.
Mm-hmm. Macbeth runs through the, through the 19th of August at the Exit Theater on Eddy Street here in San Francisco. You can visit breadboxtheater.org for more information. Ariel Kraft, director, and Warren Stevens, the creator, the compiler,
compiler. I think we're both creators, along with Maria. Compiler is probably the best word for it.
And writer.
Well, thanks for coming. I'm looking forward to seeing the production.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, from Macbeth/Macbeth, we're going to go to Hamlet next on the subject of Shakespeare, and an excerpt from Ambroise Thomas' work, Hamlet. Stay with us here. West Edge Opera is next.
Thank you.
Anderson singing the mad scene as Ophelia in Hamlet, by music by Ambroise Thomas. That production will be done not with June Anderson, but with Emma McNary in the role of Ophelia, to Edward Nelson's Hamlet, for West Edge Opera's productions. Remaining productions are this Sunday at 3 and then next Saturday at 1. Well, West Edge Opera continues its innovative productions in unusual settings through August 20th. Their new venue for West Edge Opera Festival 2017 is Pacific Pipe, Oakland, the abandoned warehouse at 1908 Poplar Street in West Oakland. This season's offerings, including Ambroise Thomas' Hamlet, will also include Libby Larson's Frankenstein, Vicente Martin e Isolés, The Chastity Tree, which has a libretto by Lorenzo da Ponte, best known as Mozart's collaborator, and the production of Hamlet, which is conducted by Jonathan Kuhner and directed by my guest, Aria Umezawa. Aria was my guest recently talking about her work with the Marilla Opera Program this year and back in 2016. And this production with West Edge marks her debut with the company. She's artistic director of Toronto-based independent opera company Opera 5 and the creator, director, and writer of the web series Opera Cheats. In addition to her work with the Marilla Program, she is currently an Adler Fellow at San Francisco Opera. Aria, welcome back to Open Air once again.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, just hearing that brief excerpt of Ophelia's Mad Scene and knowing this incredible setting that West Edge Opera has chosen for these very innovative productions, it seems like it's right up your alley.
Oh, definitely. I like anything weird and unusual in the world of opera. Uh-huh.
And so tell me, what did you do for this to make it yours?
Well, the venue for West Edge Opera is so present. It's this amazing abandoned warehouse that used to be used as a steel mill. And so I thought, what kind of environment would exist in a place like this? What kind of shows would happen? And I thought, well, probably, you know, Oakland is famous for its raves and its parties. So maybe we should try and make the production look like it is sort of a rave-type setting, rave-type
Hamlet. In a safe,
Hamlet.
let's emphasize, safe warehouse
in a safe
setting,
environment,
please.
Yes, of course.
And so how are you using the actual setting as part of the backgrounds?
Right, well, we've actually copied the architecture of the Pacific Pipe onto the stage, so we've copied the steel beaming and having it intersecting and forming a sort of our little nod to a Greek theater scheme. Having it at the background and just being very much a part of the environment there. It's all rusty and dirty and very Oakland, I think.
So as a designer director of this, how familiar were you with Ambroise de Thomas' Hamlet? Do you necessarily have to have that familiarity as opposed to, oh, this is Hamlet, now I know what I can do?
I actually had never heard of the opera before Mark Straczynski got in touch with me. He's the general director of West Edge Opera.
Big shout out to Mark. He's doing fabulous work.
Yes, definitely. And I think actually a intimate knowledge of Hamlet the play might hinder one's enjoyment of this opera, because it actually isn't based on Shakespeare's Hamlet. It's based on Dumas's adaptation of Shakespeare's Hamlet, which is significantly different from the play that we know and love.
What are some of those differences?
Well, the French very much enjoyed Shakespeare's Hamlet, but for different reasons than the English did. So gone are Hamlet's existential crisis monologues, you know, the to be or not to be, the alas poor Yorick, I knew him Horatio monologues don't show up. The cast has been narrowed from 30 characters to 5 main characters and a sort of light smattering of supporting roles. Most of the characters survive, which is a big difference for those of you who love Hamlet. So Gertrude survives, Laertes survives, Polonius survives. But what the French did find...
Although Ophelia does go mad.
She does. And actually... that's another departure from the play. We never see Ophelia die in the play. Gertrude comes in and announces it after the fact, whereas, as we just heard, it takes up all of Act 4 in the opera. So what the French found interesting and compelling about the story of Hamlet was just different from what the English did, and so they sort of made their own French version of Hamlet that spoke to their values and interests.
Mm-hmm. So your work with Opera 5 has also been on the innovative end of things. And your training with the Marilla program obviously must have had some help in forming your artistic skills.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking with some Marilla folks in the next segment as well. So mm-hmm. You're well familiar with the Marilla program.
It's an excellent program. Can't say enough about it.
And then as an Adler Fellow now, tell us about your work with the San Francisco Opera Proper.
The San Francisco Opera has been really supportive. This is sort of a new-ish venture. The last stage director they took was in 2002. It was Jose Maria Condemni. They've been giving me a lot of work with sort of smaller projects. I did 2 scenes programs with the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. I did a chamber works performance for their San Francisco Opera Lab. And we actually did a pop-up in Oakland in March that was a lot of fun to direct. So we got to be immersive. We had water guns shooting at opera singers and crepe paper oceans being formed in the audience and balloons for Sularia. It was a really awesome night.
Nice, nice. And in addition to Hamlet, I mentioned that Libby Larson's Frankenstein and Soler's The Chastity Tree are being produced. Do you have anything to do with them at all, or have you seen the productions that they're being done?
Emotional support and great admiration for the cast and director.
I should mention that The Chastity Tree, which I know nothing about, I'd really like to learn that, especially with the libretto by De Ponte. That's going to be performed this Saturday at 1 o'clock as well as next Saturday at 8 p.m.
It's quite the romp.
Yeah. Frankenstein will be this Saturday at 8 p.m. and then again Thursday, next Thursday at 7:30 p.m. and a last production on Sunday, August 20th. With Hamlet's productions remaining are on this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock and next Saturday at 1 p.m. West Edge Opera in their new performance-based Pacific Pipe, Oakland, the abandoned warehouse at 1908 Poplar Street. By the way, they offer a free shuttle to and from the West Oakland BART station beginning 2 hours before each performance, as well as patrolled street parking available where you can park for the opera. So in addition to West Edge Opera, off you go back to Toronto to produce what? What's coming up for you?
My next big project will be actually in Montreal with Opera McGill. I'll be directing Ariodante by Handel there. Mm-hmm. And then I still have an Adler Fellowship to finish up.
All right.
So I'll be back in San Francisco with the Adler concert in December. That's yet to be announced, so I should keep rather tight-lipped about that one.
All right, well, we'll keep with bated breath on that one. Well, tell us a little bit about the web series Opera Cheats. What's that all about?
When I created the web series, there was nothing really on the internet that I felt was a good primer to give to my friends and family when they wanted to come to see opera. So we created this web series that would deconstruct opera plots, but would also humanize the art form. So everyone in the web series is very young, we have a good laugh at ourselves and a good laugh at the medium. We don't shy away from any of the more ridiculous points of any plot synopsis. And when we produced the first three, I said to my business partner, Rachel Krem, if we get 500 views on these videos, I think we've done like a great job, you know, unique content based on opera. I'm sure there's not a huge audience for that. And we posted the first one and it was picked up immediately, and within the first couple hours had over 1,000 views with people asking when the next ones were coming out. So that was a little bit of a crisis we had to rally pretty quickly on that one.
Crisis of success.
Yes, crisis of success. So we were a victim of our own success, I suppose you could say. And so slowly but surely we've been tackling the canon, making videos on as many operas as we can. And we've taken some time also to stop and explain some of the opera going culture as well. Well, what to wear to the opera, what the conductor does, the three rules of opera. If you were to go to any opera and you needed to know three things really quickly, what are some good things you could bank on?
It's like the Cliff Notes version of
exactly.
People that may not be familiar with opera and just giving them some pointers.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, just a little amuse-bouche before you go.
It's not
opera.
All that frightening.
Exactly.
You can really enjoy it. That's
exactly.
That's fantastic. Well, we can go to westedgeopera.org to learn about the remaining productions of West Edge Opera. Where can we go to find all things Aria Umezawa?
Well, you can check out Opera 5's website, www.opera5.com.
Opera5.com, great.
And right now I'm keeping a low profile on the internet. I'm hoping to make a cotillion-style entrance soon.
Well, good for you. All right. Well, we wish you continued success with making that launch down the road.
Thank you.
Aria, thanks for coming in. Looking forward to seeing your work for the production of Ambroise Dumas, Hamlet, with West Edge Opera. Remaining performances once again for Hamlet this Sunday at 3 and next Saturday at 1 p.m. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Let's hear a little bit more from Thomas Hamlet as we prepare for our next opera segment with our Merrill guests.
La vie est sombre, les ans sont courts. C'est le nombre. Chacun pèlerine fortissima sa lourde chaîne.
Les plus sages sont les fous. Dissimule la tristesse qui pèse sur mon
great Thomas Hampson as Hamlet, singing, ingratiating himself with drink among the acting troupe that appears in Hamlet. That's Ambroise Dumas' Hamlet, which is being done by the West Edge Opera. Thomas Hampson, by the way, the role of Hamlet in the West Edge Opera production will be performed by Edward Nelson, along with Emma McNary's Ophelia, both of them great acclaim in the productions already for Hamlet. Thomas Hampson, by the way, a Marilla alum, which is a great segue to our next segment and talking about the Marilla Opera Grand Finale next Saturday at 7:30 at the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco, concluding the Marilla Opera Program's 2017 Summer Festival. It is one of the most prestigious and selective opera training programs in the country, and its conclusion next Saturday will bring together a number of all 23 of the Marilla singers will perform under the coaching and direction of their fellow artists with a variety of productions, scenes, and arias from the great operatic repertoire. My guests today are Ashley Dixon and David Weigel. Mezzo-soprano Ashley Dixon is from Peachtree City, Georgia, and holds a master's degree from the University of Michigan and a Bachelor of Music from Louisiana State University. She was Popova in William Walton's The Bear in this year's Marilla Opera program. Other recent roles include Mrs. Splinters in Copeland's The Tenderland in Michigan. She's a past Marilini as well and was heard in the 2015 productions of Janiskiki and The Medium, productions at Des Moines Opera Metro Opera, and several prominent roles at Michigan and Louisiana State Universities. She also enjoys oratorio singing and song recital and soloing for concert roles for such roles in Beethoven and Rossini works. For the Marilla Grand Finale, she will sing Enfin, je suis si ici from Donizetti's Cendrillon, and will be part of the quartet from Donizetti's La Favorite, and in the final rousing Rossini number from Il Viaggio a Rime. Ashley Dixon, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. David Weigel is also a returning Marilini, having sung Collatinus in Britain's The Rape of Lucrezia in 2013, and wowing the critics for his finale Verdi performance in 2013. He grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, and is trained at Furman University and the University of North Carolina in Greensboro, as well as at the University of North Carolina School for the Arts, and is currently a doctoral of musical arts student at the University of Michigan. David's extensive repertoire has led to performances with North Carolina Opera, Greensboro Opera, Piedmont Opera, Asheville Lyric, Opera North, and the Brevard Music Center, among other centers, and additional concert standard works. For the Merrill Finale program, he will sing Raimondo to Nathalie Image's Lucia for a scene from Donizetti's Lucia de Lammermoor, and will sing Don Profundo in the finale Rossini number. David, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And forgive me for massacring some of those guest artists you're working with and names among. I'm doing my best here. Well, this is both of you are no strangers to the Merrill program. Something must have lured you back. How did it happen? How about you, Ashley?
Yeah, the role that I played this summer, Popova in The Bear, was a huge attraction to me. It was like something I've never done before. I was really eager to work with Peter Cazares again, who was our director, and I'd worked with him on The Medium and Johnny Skeeky last time I was here.
Let's back up a moment for Popova in The Bear. It's a work that's not done that often, and by a composer that one doesn't associate with opera that much, William Alton.
Right, and it's funny, it's not even called an opera. It's called an extravaganza in one act.
He does that.
Yes. It's completely that. It's such a funny show. It's the characters are so extreme, and it was a daunting thing to play. The vocally, the role was kind of all over the place, and so is the character, and I couldn't have asked for a better scene partner than Cody Quattlebaum, and also Danielle Noyola, who played the servant Luca, and Cody played the bear. And we just had a roaring time tearing up the stage, throwing things around, and living in a crazy world.
And you mentioned the work that you've done with this director before.
Yes, Peter Cazares. He directed me and Johnny Skeeky and The Medium. And he's one of the best directors I've ever worked with. He was a singer himself, a wonderful singer. I've never had so much fun on stage and never so much fun in a rehearsal room than being with Peter. And he comes up with such innovative ideas all the time and knows what it's like to be a singer. And so he has so much insight on being a singer-actor and what it's like to be on stage and present yourself.
Mm-hmm. What's your big takeaway from this year's Merrill program?
Oh, my gosh. Being back a second time, it's been really wonderful, because the first time you have all this nervous energy going in, you don't know what it's going to be like. But this time, the second time around, I've gotten to really create my own experience and take so much out of it and know that every day is like a treasure and learn so much from the coaches, even getting more than I got out of last year, meeting new people and making more connections. And it has been such a wonderful process.
And it's nice to have that familiarity with San Francisco proper as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Was last year your first San Francisco experience?
Yeah, 2 years ago. I lived on Telegraph Hill. I had never been to San Francisco before, and I had never seen something like that. When we woke up in the morning to walk down to the buses, I was like, I can't even see the end of the hill. It's how high it is. But I really love it, and navigating is so much easier, and it is so wonderful to be back.
Nice. Well, David Weigel, let's have an introduction to you via some music from the 2013 Merrill program.
Okay.
David Weigel singing from Verdi's I Vespri Siciliani from the 2013 Merula Grand Finale. David, beautiful singing.
Thank you.
Tell us what we were listening to. What is it about Palermo?
Palermo. Yeah, this is a character. It's been a long time since I've actually looked at this aria. It's interesting to hear it again after 4 years. He's returned to his homeland, and he's taking in everything that's around him as he explores, and just feeling that earth beneath his feet again as he returns to Palermo.
So, same question for you. You are a return Merulini. What's different from 2013 from this year?
Quite a lot is different. I actually took some time away from performing and was focused on teaching, which kind of brought me to working on my doctorate at Michigan. And I learned so much about singing through teaching. You find that as you try to explain any kind of craft or an art to somebody, you realize how much you do or do not know. And so I've learned a lot about singing.
Or how much you think about your own craft by trying to teach it to someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah. And finding new ways to approach singing to try and teach someone that may not have the same version of how to do things as you do. So when I got to Michigan, I jumped back into performing, and it came back very, very quickly. And I thought, well, I'll throw my hat back in the ring for the young artist programs. And after my first audition I did, which didn't go quite as well as I would have liked, I kind of regrouped and had my Merula audition, and it went very, very well. And I was fortunate enough to have Sherry Greenewald and Mark Morash invite me back. And I was thrilled to be here. It's kind of been a roller coaster ride getting back into it. This past year has been so many opportunities have presented themselves, and I've tried to take as much advantage of it as possible. So being back now, 4 years older and four more years, hopefully with the wiser, I really feel I'm able to be much more of an artist. I wasn't quite so deer in the headlights like I was the first time here, which really, it was a great experience, but it felt like it just kind of ran by very, very quickly.
And was that also your first experience with San Francisco back in 2013? Or?
Actually, I was born in Santa Rosa, I moved to Asheville, North Carolina when I was six, but it was the first time I had been back. So essentially, I was viewing San Francisco for the first time. But now that I'm older and I feel like I have a much stronger understanding of my own voice and musicality and really feel like I'm able to be a real artist this time and bring new things to the table that I would not have been able to when I was younger. So it's been a very, very good experience that I'm glad that I actually did have that gap that allowed me to really mature, and now I can come here and feel like do things the way that I really would want to be able to do them.
Mm-hmm. So beyond the Donizetti and Rossini you'll be singing in the finale, you head back to work on your doctoral music. Are you able to keep some performance as part of your mainstay while you're working on your degree?
Absolutely. We do two fully staged operas at Michigan every year, and I was able to be in both of them last year, and I hopefully will be able to be in them this year as well.
Nice. And Ashley, more performance for you after this program?
Yeah, I've got some things in the works to be announced. But yeah, still performing and still working.
Nice. Well, perhaps one or both of you can offer us a little bit of an introduction to the Rossini finale that we're going to hear as part of this year's Merula Grand Finale. Give us a scene of what's happening and what the work is.
Yeah. So this trying to go to rhymes, and it's a pretty cool scene. There's some pretty spectacular...
I'm sorry, I should have introduced it. It's from Rossini's Il Viaggio a Rhymes,
mm-hmm.
And the story is...
Yeah, and so to my understanding in this scene, we hadn't been able to go to Rhymes yet. And his character comes in and is saying, we can go. And the Countess is, by this letter that I have here, we can go to Rhymes. And then everybody is, all right, andiamo, let's go. And it's a big fireworks group sing with a lot of really fast, you know, your typical Rossini patter you're going to hear. You're going to hear some crazy coloratura and some, it's Rossini at his best. It's really funny. This music and from Viaggio is actually an exact duplicate of in his Comptorie, Act One finale. And I did Comptorie about 3 years ago. And so they're introducing this. And I was like, I know it in French. I don't know it in Italian. Well. But it's really cool to be doing this same music, but in a different setting.
Anything to add to that, David Weigel?
Yeah, well, it starts off with 14 singers a cappella. So that's a bit unusual for Rossini. So
right.
It's the spectacular nature of that hits from the beginning. And then the orchestra comes in and the other Marilla singers will come in kind of with a makeshift chorus that we're adding to that. So it'll be... It'll be very fast, but also a lot of sound going out.
Okay, mm-hmm. we're catching the tail end of it, so we want, I think we'll hear the a cappella stuff, but we'll hear a bit of the ending of the grand finale for this year's Marilla Opera Program and some music of Rossini. Ashley Dixon, David Weigel, I wish you the best, and I'm looking forward to your performances next Saturday.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Ma giorni veri torna, campeste si faranno, rabbi di qui verranno, stalieri in quantità.
Ma giorni veri torna, campeste si faranno, rabbi di qui verranno, stalieri in quantità.
Da quello che preparasi al corpo di città, beh si può giudicare che festa si farà.
Da quello che preparasi al corpo di città, beh si può giudicare che festa si farà.
Che festa! Spettacolo più bello mai visto si sarà, che resto può andare, qui si consolerà.
Spettacolo più bello mai visto si sarà, che resto può andare, qui si consolerà.
T'abbraccio, o mia dolcissima, amabili le metà,
amabile metà,
amabili metà. Vigilo, patria, vigilo, patria,
just a taste of some Rossini for you, which will be rounding out the Marilla Grand Finale Concert. All 23 of the Marillanis will be participating in next Saturday's Grand Concert with full orchestral accompaniment of the San Francisco Opera Orchestra next Saturday at 7:30 at the War Memorial Opera House. Great concert ahead. Do try to check it out if you can. Marilla.org for more information and the full lineup of all of the arias that are going to be presented. Well, ending this week's open air on a lighter note, the Bay Area-based Indian-born comedians Samson Kolhatkar and Abhay Nadkami present once again the annual, now in its fourth year, Vaizhi Comedy Fest, an 11-day South Asian stand-up comedy extravaganza touring comedy clubs and theaters in 9 cities throughout Northern California. Here in San Francisco and Berkeley, Mill Valley, Santa Clara, Union City, Alameda, Livermore, Santa Cruz, and Mountain View. This festival is the largest of its kind in the United States and runs the 10th through the 20th and features some 40 South Asian comedians from all over the U.S., India, and South Africa with diverse ethnic and religious backgrounds. And each year, each of the prior 3 years, attendance has basically doubled year to year. So this year should see some impressive numbers in attendance. It's a pleasure to welcome back Samson Kolhatkar, the co-producer and fine comedian himself, who was born in Mumbai and raised Jewish. That alone is plenty of fodder for the next 8 minutes easily, but let's give you a little bit more creds here. So after earning a master's degree in computer software and fulfilling his parents' dreams, he moved to San Francisco to perform comedy.
In a nutshell.
But I should also give you some props that Silicon India Magazine named you one of the top 10 Indian comedians who found success in the U.S. He runs Comedy Oakland, which was winner of the 2016 Best Place for Comedy in the East Bay Express Readers Poll, as well as the number one comedy club in the San Francisco Bay Area on Yelp. Pleasure to welcome you back, Samson.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Of course. Well, the tremendous success of this festival speaks for itself. But let's talk about some of the newcomers this year.
Yes.
And understand one of the newcomers was supposed to be a newcomer last year, but had a
Azhar Usman.
What happened there?
So I was so glad to see his text from Chicago airport going, "Hey, I'm on my way to San Francisco." Because last year he was supposed to do the festival, and then the week of the festival, he was crossing the street in Chicago, got hit by a pickup truck, and got hospitalized.
Wow.
So I was really worried if he's going to make it this year or get hit by the travel ban, but he's here. So.
Well, that's got to be something that's got to be of concern to you. I mean, this election has knocked everyone on their ass, so to speak, in terms of just basic sensibilities. I mean, for you guys especially, it must be like, wow. Has it been difficult?
It has been a little tricky. I mean, personally, I haven't felt anything yet, but I do know there's a lot of living on the left coast.
We're here.
Exactly. I was flabbergasted more than anything else, to be honest, because I thought after two presidencies of Bush, America had moved on and elected Obama and we could never go back. But apparently we can. So America keeps disappointing me every single year.
I know. Instead of, it seems like we're riding in on the horseman of the apocalypse rather than on an accepting rainbow-maned unicorn the way we should be, you know?
All the more reason for something like this festival to be around, because we produce and try to bring in all these diverse new voices focused on South Asians, but we call it a pan-brown, pan-Asian comedy festival. So we have Lebanese and Egyptian and Iranian comics on it, and we have Filipinos and Koreans and Vietnamese comics on it as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should mention that Azhar Usman, should he safely get the rest of the way, he's supposed to appear at Cobb's tonight.
Correct.
And tomorrow in Alameda at the Rhythmic Cultural Works.
Yes.
One of the other newcomers is Alingan Mitra, who has written for The Daily Show and been on numerous late-night talk shows, Conan O'Brien, Colbert, Craig Ferguson.
All of them.
Tell us a little bit about how you discovered Alingan.
Actually, it was Abhay who did. Abhay and Alingan did some shows together, and that's where the name popped in. And then we reached out to him for the fest, and he actually is doing another Indian-centric show tonight in New York, but he'll be here for the next weekend shows.
So. I've got a brief clip of him, and he's got some great observational humor. Here's Alingan Mitra.
People say figure skating is the gayest sport, but I think it's football. Think about it. You have these, like, muscular men in tights trying to get on top of one dude and this other group that's like, no, stop, he's ours. You do something wrong, a man trots out and throws out a colored flag. Blows a whistle. Holding. That's the gayest penalty. No time. You can't hold on to him. You gotta let him go. He's chasing after another man. He's going for the sack. Gay marriage. It's a hot
A time. Brief clip from Alingan Mitra, who will be performing on the 18th in Union City and on the 20th here in San Francisco at the Marines Memorial Opera House. Talking with fine comedian in his own right, Samson Kolhatkar, one of the co-founders of the Vasey Comedy Fest, which is now underway through the 20th in venues throughout the whole Bay Area. Fantastic discovery there. I'm so glad you could get him. And another newcomer is Ahmed Barucha. Tell us about Ahmed.
So I had worked with Ahmed a few years ago when he came and did my show in Oakland. And he has a very interesting background. One parent is Irish Catholic, another one is Pakistani Muslim. And a lot of times people ask me this question when I find out I was raised Jewish in India, and they go, are both your parents Jewish? And I reply, no, my father's Christian, my mother's Muslim. They hated each other so much, they raised me Jewish. It's a very sarcastic thing that I say. And then Ahmed Barucha shows up with a Christian and a Muslim parent. I'm like, dude, you're like reincarnation of my joke in life person. And so he's brilliant. He's got a Comedy Central half-hour special. I've been trying to get him to do this festival for 4 years now, since the first year we've done this. So I'm so glad finally to have him here on 2017.
Well, we've got a great clip from him that I discovered. Great observational humor. And this is his take on cows. Oops. There we go.
You're taking it too far with cows. We kill them, we eat them, we wear them. That's on par with most animals. But with cows, we also eat veal, which are their children. Then we drink their milk. It doesn't sound as bad, but it's the milk intended for their children we ate. We eat their babies, and then we eat their babies' food. With cookies. Just dunking cookies in there. Just a midnight snack. But then, on top of all of that, we take pictures of our missing children. Put it on their milk. Hey, sorry for killing your kid. Haven't seen my kid, though. Have you? Real worried about my kid. Your kid's dead. Ate him. Washed him down with his own food. People look out for my kid.
Too much. Ahmed Barucha as part of the Vasey Comedy Fest. He's going to be appearing, I don't have that down.
August 19th in Livermore, August 20th in San Francisco.
There you go.
Got it all down in my head.
You must. Samson, what else should you be looking forward to? I mean, all of these comedians are just like amazing finds.
Yeah, one of the things we always try to do is bring new faces. So out of about 45 comedians we have on the festival this year, at least 25 are new, who have never done the fest before. So there's a lot of new stuff to see. And then the usual suspects are back as well. We have comedians who are like South African. We have an East African Indian descent comedian. And just a whole mix of comics from around the country that I have not seen them before. So I'm really excited to see everybody. We expect the same amount of hilarity. And if what you said at the beginning goes true, hopefully we double the audience and we can hit 4,000 people this year.
Mm-hmm. Samson Kolhatkar, thanks so much for coming in today. And we look forward to the Vasey Comedy Festival. That's spelled DESICComedyFest.com for tickets and information. Now through the 20th in venues throughout the Bay Area. Catch some great comedy.
And we are going to give away 2 free tickets on air to the show tonight at Cobb's Comedy Club. It's the opening night.
Oh, fantastic.
If Azhar Usman makes it from Chicago to San Francisco, you could catch him live. He was billed by CNN as the funniest Muslim in America.
All right. Well, the number to call is 415-841-4134 for a pair of tickets. For tonight's opening festival.
It's the opening night tonight at 8 at Cobb's.
At Cobb's here in San Francisco. 415-841-4134. Samson Kolhatkar, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. That's Open Air for this week. A reminder that our shows are archived at KALW.org. If you've got a show suggestion, by all means, drop me a line. David@KALW.org. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. I'm David Latulippe. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.